Hello and welcome to Future Imperfect. I'm your host, Admiral Phillips, and joining me is Captain Dodd.
That's right, it is I, your captain, though I'm not in charge of this boat, as I'm just, well, I'm the second in command here. And that's, you know what, I'm kind of okay with that. So last time on Future Imperfect, we had a chance to talk about the ships of Starfleet, talking about their designs, and also kind of touching on some of the designs that may be coming up in the future of actual space travel. Who's to say we won't get our own NX series at some point? But we kind of venture away from the technology of Starfleet. Well, not directly. We're actually talking about a piece of technology who also happens to be one of my favorite characters on the show. We're going to be talking about the EMH Mark I, a.k.a. Bob. Or, no, Joe, I think it was.
Joe, the doctor.
Joe, the doctor from Star Trek Voyager, but also has made appearances in DS9 and also
First Contact.
First Contact, and also a cameo appearance in Star Trek Renegades as Dr. Lewis Zimmerman. So Robert Picardo is one of the character actors who has a rather prolific career in Hollywood. He's been on China Beach. He's been on The Wonder Years. He's done stuff on CSI. I think he was on Smallville. He also did bits. He was Commander Woolsey on Stargate and Stargate Atlantis, which I haven't gotten to his character just yet because I'm going through Stargate sequentially right now. So,
well, now he's actually a board member on the Planetary Society.
Mm-hmm. So what does that entail exactly?
It's basically it has to do with, and I'm not like 100% sure, but it has to do with like space exploration and kind of the great beyond and various things going on with NASA and with new scientists, and it's all stuff surrounding space. Bill Nye is like the chairman of it, which is kind of interesting. And so, you know, they've got a lot of interviews with people with their doctorates and basically talking about, like, you know, possibilities in spacecraft and you know, new satellites and just a lot of things surrounding space.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of one of the voices and one of the guys that's doing like the newsletter, and he's doing some of the video interviews, and so a lot of it is him kind of diving in there using his experience and stuff with Star Trek and beyond kind of in the process.
Which I gotta say, Robert Picardo certainly is a guy who wears many hats. He's obviously been an actor for quite some time. He's quite the accomplished musician, especially when it comes to his singing. That actually is him, from what I can tell, on the episodes of Star Trek. He's sung opera before. He's done the Star Trek The Music Tour with John DeLancey, where he would narrate parts of Star Trek's history, stuff like that, which I think is rather interesting. Always been a big fan of Robert Picardo's voice. I've actually interviewed him before on Future Imperfect. Actually, during that interview, if you go back and listen to it, you can actually hear Bill Nye come into the house during the interview, and you hear Robert go, "Oh, hey, Bill," and I'm so hesitant to call him Bob Picardo because I feel like that's what his friends call him. But Bob's like, "Oh, Mike, hold on. Bill Nye just walked in." And I was like, "Holy shit, really? That's so cool." So I kind of fanboyed out there for like 30 seconds. But so the EMH character is yet another artificial life form in the proud tradition of Lieutenant Commander Data. But you also see other characters in Star Trek like Professor Moriarty, multiple holodeck characters like Vic Fontaine, and just other people that typically become character of the week or monster of the week, if you will. There have been entire races of photonic beings. I know there was an episode of Star Trek Voyager called Bride of Chaotica, where there was an entire photonic realm, and they assumed the Doctor was another photonic being like them, as he was the president of Earth, so to speak. stuff like that. And the EMH began life as a new piece of Starfleet technology that was being installed upon most new Federation ships, such as the new Intrepid class and Voyager and the Sovereign class. And the Mark I was notable for its not very nice bedside manner, which is based upon Louis Zimmerman's personality. And eventually they were relegated to mining dilithium because it was deemed too dangerous and they were considered inferior, like their programs would freak out and everything like that. But over the course of Voyager's 7 years towards home, you eventually saw the EMH to develop a personality, to develop friendships, complex relationships, and even start to develop romantic and emotional feelings for certain members of the Voyager crew, most notably people like Seven of Nine. You saw the mentorship he had with Kes, stuff like that. Difficult to quantify his relationship with Tom Paris, but you could say he was friends with everybody on the command staff in some capacity. But you'd see him spend a lot of his social time with Seven of Nine, stuff like that.
One of the interesting things is that the EMH Mark I, there have been multiple versions of the EMH, according to Zimmerman, and the Mark II actually gets to work with Joe here, and in a particular episode of Voyager where they're trying to release a Starfleet vessel from Romulan control.
Which that Mark II is played by Andy Dick in a fantastically coherent performance, which I kind of thought how they thought Andy Dick is what Starfleet's future looks like.
But it took the Doctor to kind of be like, snap out of this. I've kind of done stuff like this before.
Yeah, which is kind of neat. And that's also the first time we see the Prometheus class in Star Trek. That's also one of the ships we talked about last week here on the show. I think that episode was called Message in a Bottle, I think.
I think so.
But yeah, you would see the EMH sort of grow because as the Star Trek writers tried to figure out, okay, so we have this character. What can we do with him? And eventually, in I think the third season, he gets his mobile emitter. He gets it from the 29th century, though he gets it in 1999. So, of course, time travel, because why not? It's Star Trek.
It was awesome when he got that in Future's End Part 2, the guy from what was it, 96, Henry Starling. That he got from the Aeon timeship.
I'm trying to remember the name of the actor. Ed Begley Jr., that's it. I always remember him because there's this great bit on The Simpsons where he had a motorcycle powered by his own sense of self-satisfaction, which I always thought that was a really clever gag. But the EMH would become a person over the course of these 7 years, and you really start to see him start to take an interest in his personal development. There's an episode where he creates his own holographic family, and then B'Elanna starts to twerk with the program. Not twerk. I knew I had the right T word.
She twerked the program, and the Doctor was astounded.
Yeah, she just shook her ass. It was amazing. And the program started to behave rather than this idyllic Leave It to Beaver 1950s style family. It was like, oh, yes, dear, and the very new nuclear family. Problems started to show up. The son would be disobedient. The daughter would be kind of a brat. The wife would be, I am my own woman. I'm going to go do my own thing. And he was kind of left there thinking, well, guys, this is supposed to be my fantasy. And they're like, no, families are not fantasy. Families are work. And if you want them to work, good things and bad things will happen. And a great part of that episode is where it sucks to say, but his little girl dies. She gets a head injury playing Parisi Square, and the Doctor has to calm her down as she cannot be saved. The medical science is not advanced enough. He can't save her, and she's scared to die, and he has to guide her into that process. There's another episode called Latent Image where the Doctor's memory has been changed, where he has to choose between saving two different crew members, Ensign Jatal and Ensign Harry Kim, and he chooses to save his friend, and it literally drives him nuts with guilt to the point where his program starts ending up in this feedback loop, and he starts just going nuts. And you start to see him wrestle with real emotions like remorse, guilt. Survivor's guilt is one of the great things, you see. And Robert Picardo doesn't get enough credit as an actor, though he was nominated for an Emmy for his work on The Wonder Years. I think he should have been nominated for some of the stuff he did in Voyager.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's some great moments in Someone to Watch Over Me where he's teaching Seven of Nine to be human, which is, I think, a great kind of parallel. Like, the machine teaching the other machine how to act like a person or how to be a person. And you can tell he's falling in love with her. And she says something along the lines, "I find no suitable mates on this ship." And he very respectfully respects those wishes and says, "Oh, well, okay," and backs away. Doesn't try to change her mind, doesn't keep trying to pressure her or anything, just politely accepts it. And that's a great teachable moment. I actually watched this video today that was talking about romantic tropes, and you'd be surprised how many times the you know what? That's a different discussion for a different day. We can talk about sexuality and masculinity and toxic masculinity in Star Trek an entire episode, but I'm not the guy to talk about that
because
I don't write those essays. I'm not that smart. But anyway, no, there's just – that's a really great moment in just how human the Doctor has become, where he respects her boundaries like that. Well, but the fact that you can see he's pained for it, he's like, I really love her, but I can't do a thing about it.
Well, and it's just like when he has word that Zimmerman is dying.
Yeah, he wants to go save his quote-unquote dad.
Yeah, he wants to go save him, and he's like, I just want you to be proud of me. I'm your hologram, and I've been running concurrently for 7 years, and, you know, it was never meant to run for more than 1,500 hours, And Zimmerman's like, you're just an old antique. You're a piece of junk. I'm going to send you to the mining colony. And then, you know, comes to figure out that, you know, that this Mark One was not only able to save Zimmerman, but Zimmerman was able to save the Mark One with some enhancements.
Yeah, like there's some really cool moments with the Mark One where you really, once again, you get to see these moments where he develops these fantastic new surgeries where he basically cures the phage from the Vidians in like the first two seasons of Voyager. They're supposed to be the big baddies. You only ever see them show up a few times. But still, you get to see him do that. You see him perform a surgery with Seven of Nine's nanoprobes, which brings Neelix back from
the dead.
And another episode, he develops holographic lungs.
Well, and then there's another episode entirely where Paris goes warp 10 into transwarp and turns into kind of a lizard thing, and Janeway turns into one too, and he somehow reverse engineers them back into humans.
You know what? The less we talk about that episode, the better.
I was so confused. Holy Christ. I remember that as a kid, like, or as a young adult, and then watching it again recently just because I wanted to see. You know, and there was no explanation. The Doctor just fixed them. And so that just says that the EMH is awesome.
I know there was a meme going around where somebody submitted a paper to a scientific journal based upon that episode, and it actually got accepted. I can't remember the details of it, but look that up if you know what I'm talking about. And there was a poll recently on StarTrek.com saying, which Doctor would you trust the most with your well-being? At the low end of the totem pole was Dr. Culver from Star Trek Discovery.
Well, we really didn't get to see him much.
Yeah, and he really didn't do a lot.
And so nobody really knew much about him other than the fact that he died. And he was the most intelligent one on the ship.
He had really good bedside manner, I guess, if you had to give him anything.
Yeah, he was about on par with, like, Dr. Crusher.
I think Dr. Crusher came in third. Dr. Phlox was down near the bottom as well.
Bashir Bone must have been below.
I don't think he was actually on that. I know it was the EMH Bashir, or the EMH Crusher.
McCoy,
Phlox, and Culber. Yeah, I don't think Bashir was on that list at all.
Which is a travesty.
Yeah, because the EMH came in at 36%.
I thought the EMH came in won, at number and one. Then McCoy was second.
I think so, yeah. But I know the EMH definitely won that poll for sure, which is a testament to how powerful a piece of technology he really is. I was watching another episode tonight where the episode was called Living Witness, where he has to basically prove he's not a war criminal and this entire species war has not been caused by Voyager. And it's him basically fighting for his life. But he also makes a moment of self-sacrifice where he says, look, if you delete me, then your person still stays a martyr. I don't have to undo 700 years of history. It's the right thing to do. Then the person who was with him was like, no, you can't do that. You need to set the record straight. I'm like, yeah, but not at the expense of your planet's history. And then it's revealed just a few moments later that this is indeed a flashback even further, that this EMH actually did help set the record straight with his testimony, setting the table for these two species to start getting along. And eventually this EMH left this planet looking for Voyager's way home almost 1,000 years later, but he did it, which is, I think, kind of cool. So there's another EMH heading towards the Alpha Quadrant very, very slowly, but still.
Which is a bit insane.
Which is a bit nuts, because you have to wonder, is Starfleet even still around at that point? Which I guess the Borg didn't overrun the Delta Quadrant if this planet survived.
Well, if you're going by Star Trek Online timetable, they're all still around.
Yeah.
But no, one of the interesting things is that he was, yes, we had the holodeck, yes, we had holographic people, but we didn't have actually useful, fully cognitive, sentient versions of holographic technology. And with this doctor, this particular version, he evolved beyond his original programming, just like Data. In that sense, although he was more, I would argue, more human than Data was, even towards the end.
Yeah, I would totally argue, because Data was limited by hardware. The doctor's software was, in theory, only limited by memory capacity. So his program could be rewritten and expanded almost infinitely, I guess. I guess depending on how much stuff he could shove into his memory buffers or whatever the hell they called it.
Well, and especially with the mobile emitter.
Yeah, exactly. He had more chances to be upgraded as opposed to Data. He's built, that's it. Sure, he could probably modify himself, but there's probably an upper limit to that.
Well, the interesting thing is, and this is from the Star Trek Online information, is that in the timeline of that, the Doctor filed a lawsuit against Starfleet to retain control of his mobile emitter, leading to a movement lobbying to establish civil rights for sentient artificial life forms, including holographic photonic projections and androids. So like the Soong Foundation develops a mobile emitter for civilian use, and photonic life forms equipped with mobile emitters serve on away teams alongside biological beings. The players can obtain these in the game, which is kind of cool. I myself have a photonic engineer.
That's cool.
On my crew, and you cannot make him look like the EMH. You can actually pick him up and is one of your duty officers in the game by playing a mission in the Delta Quadrant. So, like, if somebody uses a hypo spray, you have the chance that the doctor will beam down and start healing your crew.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And the nice thing is when you're on an away team and you're a photonic engineer, or, I mean, you can get a science officer too, which is ungodly expensive in the game. And then the tactical, you have to, the only way you can get it is by, like, Lobby Crystal, which is stupid, ridiculously expensive. And so, like, the engineer is the only one I can get in-game for the most part. But it has a mobile emitter, so when, like, he's out of HP, the mobile emitter is on the ground wherever he fell, and it's like sending off like a shockwave symbol or a signal so that it flags you to go resurrect him. But he's immune to like anything the Borg really dish out, which is kind of cool.
That's really neat, actually.
So it's definitely something really cool with continuing through Star Trek Online and getting some of this, some of those type of characters. But I love how the EMH, due to his story that he kind of crafted of the ECH, you know, designing a backup captain protocol. I love how he was able to possess the information from all the major Starfleet strategic and tactical databases to where he could plan for controlling the ship and have basic engineering skills to assess damage and to interact with a computer and any console and just kind of take command should the captain be incapacitated.
Yeah, it's once again showing Starfleet's technological forward thinking, but also the Doctor evolving as a person, as a program. Yeah, I mean, I think it's neat just having access to all that information, although he could use a little work on his personality when he's using the ECH protocols, because he's like, yeah, I'll kick your ass, stuff like that. He's a little shaky, but that's his personality. I'm sure that could be ironed out over time with, I guess, a bravery subroutine, or
so all he needs to do is download himself some Picard, some Sisko, some Kirk, and some Janeway, and then he's good.
Exactly. Once again, once he gets the bugs ironed out of his ECH protocol, he'd be all ready to rock and roll. But yeah, I mean, there's so many things the Doctor accomplished, and he wasn't the only holographic, once again, character on the show. Like I said, we did see the Mark II. You saw Vic Fontaine on DS9, who was like this Vegas lounge singer, and I'd argue he was bordering on sentience.
Yeah, because he answered a lot of stuff for Quark and everybody else that went in there with a problem.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably a proto-doctor, so to speak. Like,
I would almost say he was like their psychiatrist.
Yeah,
like their Counselor Troy, but mixed with Dr. McCoy in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions there. Like, was Vic truly self-aware like the Doctor? Did he have that sense of self-determination? Would he improve his program if given the chance? And I guess DS9 didn't really delve into these questions too much because they were focused on the other characters and the Dominion War. But you have to kind of wonder, with Starfleet's holodeck technology, what were the upper limits of it? Because we saw with the Enterprise D and the Galaxy Class Starship, Professor Moriarty became sentient. And they said you can live in the holo computers for as long as you want. However, that being said, the longer a hologram runs, it degrades over time. So that's why the EMH was only designed to run 1,500 hours. So is Professor Moriarty trapped in a holodeck program that's slowly corroding around him, or what?
I think he went down with the ship in Generations.
So, yeah, I mean, that's another crew member lost, or not crew member, but another person lost on the Enterprise, which I think that's kind of fascinating to think about. With enough technological know-how, you can literally create life. I mean, you saw the Doctor become a holographic author. He's literally creating life in there when you really think about it. So it poses ethical questions as well.
And it makes you wonder if some of the characters couldn't be replicated at some point. Like, if they were to have, like, a brain dump into a hologram and essentially live forever. Because remember Barclay from TNG, who came over to Voyager, made himself a copy onto, like, just a partial copy of what he needed to essentially help Voyager, and sent his program to Voyager to be a holographic version of himself. Although it was corrupted by the Ferengi, it was still a Barclay.
Yeah, it was based upon his, like, kind of his brainwaves, his thought patterns, stuff like that. So I'd like to know more about how holographic programming works, how you create these things if you can base them off of real people by using real biological data, because that brings in another question, which kind of going off topic here, but we've talked about this before on This Week in Geek. We've talked about virtual immortality and brain taping. How much memory does the human brain actually take up? Can you copy data like that? If you could your consciousness, quote unquote, live on as a hologram? Does that hologram have rights? And as you just mentioned a few minutes ago, the Doctor and other artificial life forms petitioned or sued Starfleet into basically giving them rights, which is, once again, you look at the episode of TNG, Measure of a Man, is Data alive or not? Stuff like that.
And see, I would almost argue that they're all alive to some capacity, because he outlived his programming. And even the Mark II, I would argue.
To me, I've always viewed artificial life when it can realize and be fearful of its own demise, or once it says the phrase, I think, therefore I am, when it says the phrase I, it is no longer just simply a tool. It has become something else entirely. And the Doctor has definitely proven that by adding daydreaming routines, by adding singing, artistic expression, the fact that he has fallen in love and felt loss. It's not just emotion, where Data was literally emotion contained on a piece of hardware. This is a piece of every evolving software. And I think that's where the Doctor is. In essence, I really do believe, and I will fight me on this one, I think the Doctor's a better character than Data.
Yeah, I would argue that as well. I enjoy his character, and while I do enjoy Data, I find the Doctor, even though his bedside manner sucks, he's still just a member of the crew, but he's also a lot more than that, and willing to put himself into predicaments that he doesn't necessarily need to do. And the fact that when he got the mobile emitter, he was a lot more involved with away missions. He was a lot more involved with just random things around the ship. I mean, he was a lot more mobile, and it was just a lot better storytelling with his character.
Well, to even expand upon that, to kind of bring in actors into this, I think Robert Picardo is a better actor than Brent Spiner, because I think you saw a lot more range of emotion. And I know to say Data has emotion, I mean, there's certain things as an actor, and I know Data's soon-type android is programmed to feign emotion or to act as human as it can, but, you know, he is a man portraying a robot at the end of the day. Whereas Robert Picardo, portraying this being learning how to be human, has a little bit more leeway. And there were genuine moments during the original watch of the series, especially where he loses his daughter, or where Seven breaks his heart. Those were moments that tugs at the heartstrings genuinely. The only moment I can think of with Data is where he lost his daughter, Lol, and maybe one or two other moments, especially where Lore tells Data that he loves him. Maybe that, but I'd argue there were more Picardo moments than Brent Spiner moments. And they both had 7 seasons, so you can't tell me one had more time over the other. In fact, I'm pretty sure Voyager only had 15 episodes in its first season. So I'm pretty sure TNG ran the full 24, but I'm not 100% sure of that, so don't quote me on that. So I think just the strength of personality, the strength of personal charisma from Robert Picardo lent a lot more to the role of the Doctor. In fact, I will even go on record, I think he's in the top 3 characters of Star Trek of all time. I really believe that. I think Avery Brooks as Benjamin Sisko, Patrick Stewart, Robert Picardo, trying to think who else really had a powerful role. I think Jeri Ryan, despite her supposedly acting emotionless as Borg, has some genuine moments too. There's one episode where the Doctor takes over Seven's body, and Jeri Ryan has to take on Robert Picardo's mannerisms and everything else, and you see her having some wonderful fun with it. It's hilarious watching her get drunk.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that one when they had the Delta Flyer and had to they were trying out the quantum slipstream drive.
Yeah, I mean, there's moments like that where you really see the character shine, and through other people, it shines as well. There's even another episode where the Doctor's body is taken over by the sentient warhead, like this missile that thinks it's on a mission to go destroy this planet, but it turns out these people are long dead. The mission's been canceled. And Robert Picardo has to play this completely different character, but inhabiting the same skin. And that's something you saw Brent Spiner play Lore and Data. You might see him have a little bit of fun with Data here and there, but not to the same range as you see with Picardo. Picardo was a lot funnier, I think. Data played it a lot more straight at times.
Well, and I don't fault Spiner or Data for that, just because that's how their characters were written. However, I will say that Picardo had the ability to show his range with his character, whereas Spiner did not. And Picardo, I kind of saw as like this generation's Dr. McCoy.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
Gruff, sarcastic, and able to get the job done no matter what and figure out whatever the problem is. But, you know, he's going to give you some lip for it at the same time.
I think the thing I like about the Doctor is he may not be the easiest person to be your friend, but he'll be the person that will never hold back the truth from you, because he is that Doctor. He's in a position of authority. But he also understands people.
Which I almost wonder if that's the same thing as what happened, if he got that mannerism from McCoy. Because McCoy was still alive that we knew of in the 24th century.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and that's maybe something that they wrote into the character. Because not only did the Doctor have to fulfill medical roles, he would have to fulfill counseling as well. Because that's something that only was ever addressed on Star Trek TNG, was a full-time ship's counselor. You didn't hear that about DS9. You didn't, outside of Vic Fontaine, you didn't hear that on Voyager. The Doctor may prescribe you like, hey, you're having a hard time. Here's some Zoloft.
I believe Ezri Dax was the replacement for Jadzia, was a counselor.
Okay, so I'm not super familiar with a lot of DS9 people, so forgive me there.
It's she shows up like the last season or two, like literally like just as the replacement. So but yeah, it's not really in a Voyager. The funny thing is for the counselor eye for Barclay, Troy made multiple appearances.
Yeah, which I'm really glad they got Marina Sirtis back to actually do that. So
And they also had Jonathan Frakes in an episode earlier on when Q was in the episode.
Yep.
So, like, what's funny is Jonathan Frakes and John DeLancey were the only... Well, not even John DeLancey. John DeLancey was in three Trek series. Jonathan Frakes was in four. Mm-hmm. And Marina Sirtis was in three as well, if you count the crappy ending to Enterprise. But... but yeah, it's and Picardo, he's only in this and technically TNG if you count First Contact. So I mean, there's I love it when there's like a lot of crossover between Trek characters. But I thought it was kind of funny when they had his character show up on First Contact when the Borg were coming in sickbay.
Yeah, see, it's little moments like that, and even still had Bob's trademark wit and sarcasm, and just it worked. And you could tell that was an earlier version of the EMH too.
Yeah, the Mark One with the current uniform.
Yeah, it's little things like that I think are nice little touches to the universe. So what more can be said about the Doctor that we haven't said over the course of the last half hour or so. Fantastically written character, a unique character, and according to Star Trek Online, has started a civil rights movement in the Star Trek universe. And I'm glad a character like Joe can literally be blazing a trail through the new Star Trek universe to establish new rights and new civil responsibilities for an entirely new race of people, be it artificial beings like Data and other robots, androids, or cyborgs, etc., to photonic beings like the Doctor, Mark One, Mark Two, and Joe himself as a unique individual. So,
One of the interesting things too, another thing with Star Trek Online is they had, and I'm not sure where this is on the game. I can't remember right now, but it says that new versions of the EMH, the Mark Six, serving aboard the USS Kittimer, resembled a Vulcan with silver hair. The EMH in dialogue released on YouTube but not included in the game claims to have a personality matrix that combines qualities of more than 20 physicians, scientists, and counselors, including Beverly Crusher, Admiral Spock, or Ambassador Spock, somebody from Andoria, and was voiced by Zachary Quinto. Mm-hmm. So the Star Trek Online has like a lot of the photonic characters between medical holograms, engineering holograms, security holograms, duty officers. Like they load you up with duty officers. You can get tactical and science. It's crazy. And you get like almost free range to design them. So I like turning them into the original series characters.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of fun. I've tried to make the Robert Picardo version. It doesn't play out very well because they purposely don't give you the keys to the kingdom there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would love nothing more than to design him like that. But I think that the EMH or the photonic characters are probably the most fun and the most interesting characters in Trek, in the sense that they're a program, but they've gone so far beyond it, and they aren't out to kill you.
Exactly. So I guess that's pretty much going to do it for this episode of Future Imperfect. What do we want to talk about next week, Steve?
I'm not really sure. Maybe we'll just kind of see what pops up over the next week, and maybe we'll have some listener suggestions, which they can send to feedback@ussfutureimperfect.com.
And we definitely look forward to hearing from you. So I guess for Future Imperfect, we have been
Steve Megatron Phillips.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying live long and prosper, and please state the nature of the medical emergency.